Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH. Streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. If you don't have it, you should download it immediately. Welcome to the city of Seattle. Not only can you smoke fentanyl consequence-free, but apparently get involved in a mass shooting and not get too much jail time. That is what's trending.
What's trending? Crime.
There's a dude named William Tolliver. Doesn't seem like a great guy. In fact, quite the opposite. Seems like a bad person. Incredibly dangerous. He was involved in a shooting in downtown Seattle, one that killed a woman, injured half a dozen others, including a 9-year-old boy. It happened right in the middle of day, during a busy commute. And this guy, William Tolliver, pled guilty on Friday to second-degree manslaughter, third-degree assault, and second-degree unlawful possession of a firearm. Now, second-degree manslaughter means he killed someone as a result of criminal negligence. Someone died as a result of criminal negligence on his part. But because it's not seen as a serious violent offense, and you can thank Democrats in Olympia for that, he's entitled to a third off of his sentence, which means that thanks to the credit for time he's already served, he's likely not going to see any jail time whatsoever. Not even an extra day. Now, maybe you recall this because when this mass shooting occurred, Tolliver fled to Las Vegas. Okay? Right after the shooting, he fled to Las Vegas. And yet still, we decide to go easy on this guy. This is the guy who was released pending the trial only to be arrested again just a few weeks ago. The claim that he threatened to kill someone and at the time illegally possessed a firearm. He is said to have lifted his shirt. Gun is tucked into his pants. Shows it. Says something like, "This is for you." Something to that effect. Allegedly. He ends up getting arrested for that. Now, why would we, number one, settle with this guy? And why would we, number two, go so easy with the charges? Second-degree manslaughter? Really? Now, part of the reason for the settlement, at least, we have a left-wing court. We have a left-wing judge. In fact, most of the judges there are very far to the left. Not all, but many. And the defense, Tolliver's side, might have ultimately won a battle, basically arguing we can't get a fair trial in Seattle because of the comments made by the spokesperson for the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. When Tolliver was released, Casey McNerthany, the spokesperson, friend of mine, made comments that would be seen or should be seen as deeply prejudicial. In fact, they're just racist. Racist comments. And the jury, the potential jury, can't unhear those words that they never heard to begin with. That's what the claim is. Now, what were those racist comments? Because the Seattle Times has the story and they point to the comments. Don't actually quote Casey. I saw this story. I think it was Como, might have been Cairo or King. It's probably all of them. No one is quoting Casey McNerthany and the so-called racist comments, which to me can mean one of two things. Number one, it is so deeply racist that they wouldn't dare utter the words again, even mentally as they're typing them out. The reporter felt that uncomfortable. That's possibility number one. Or number two, not really racist, and by keeping them away from print, we're basically telling people, it's so bad, just use your imagination how bad it is, because we want to carry water for Tolliver and this idea of systemic racism within the criminal justice system. It's not number one. It's number two. Which
you're
ironically
sure
is
you're
the
sure
situation we find ourselves in.
Okay.
I found them. I found the comments. I went back to the early reports in which they were printed. Quote, when you have somebody who has a history of not following court orders, has a half dozen domestic violence offenses, no matter who the defendant is, that's a concern. If you're charged with murder in the first degree and 6 counts of assault in the first degree and have shot victims at random, you absolutely should be held responsibly in jail. And that's what we argued for. That's racist. That's okay. Are we going to go with that?
Apparently so.
Is that what we're going with?
That's what we're going with.
Seattle Times says the defense argued McNerney's comments invited racial stereotypes of black men as violent and dangerous, and therefore less entitled to the presumption of innocence, according to court records. That they heard black in that suggests they're the racists, not Casey. Number two. Did you know that Casey said that? You work in media. We covered this story at the time. Did you know?
I did not.
No, I didn't remember the comments he made. Do you think anyone, do you even think Casey remembered the comments that he made?
Probably not.
Do you think anyone even read the comments at any point during any of their coverage of this story? Some dude is kind of curious, oh, what was that case that happened? And they Google it and they look up a story from Seattle Times or wherever. You think they read that statement?
I don't think so.
Do you think if they read it, they remembered it?
Absolutely not.
Do you think they have any idea what in God's name any of this means?
No.
No. Not even a little bit. And yet we're supposed to pretend that what he just said was racist. And I legitimately think that the prosecutors in this case, whichever ones were assigned to it, believed that the racial justice element would come up. They already screwed up the other guy who was involved in this case, who was found not guilty. Basically, if I recall, the argument was effectively he was acting in self-defense because he was firing at someone who was firing at him. Uh-huh. It's right in the middle. Right. This guy's a bad guy. We're still now waiting to find out what the punishment, if anything, will be for violating the court order and having that gun and allegedly having the gun and allegedly threatening someone to death, which was kind of a point that Casey McNerney today made on our sister station, Power News Radio.
We argue that this person is a danger to the community because of his behavior and because of the previous inability to follow court orders.
Seems reasonable to me, but to them it's racist, what he just said. Did you hear all those dog whistles?
I did.
Did you? Did you really? Because I don't think you did. There were 9 seconds in that somehow there were 13 dog whistles. Listen.
We argue dog that whistle, this person
whistle.
Is a danger to the community
racist
because
is a danger.
Of his behavior.
Behavior racist?
Because
is a racist.
Inability
word.
To follow.
Inability?
Court.
Oh, so they're all dumb? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, all racist.
I counted 12.
Right? I could argue maybe 13, but I, you know, we'll go with 12. Push the button.
What's trending? Legal.
So while we go easy on criminals in Seattle, the state, thanks to Democrats, go after law-abiding gun owners. And of course, by default, going after the folks who run gun shops or pawn shops that deal with weapons. And there's kind of an interesting dilemma out of Bonnie Lake where a pawn shop owner is basically trying to figure out whether or not he can give someone back one of the banned quote-unquote assault weapons without violating the assault weapons ban, a gun that he was holding on to as collateral in this pawn shop. I find this fascinating. King 5 says pawn shops that take firearms as collateral are unsure if they can give the gun back to its owner or sell it to the customer who does not pay off their loan.
Now I'm stuck with something that I can't transfer. I can't sell it. I can't do anything with it. It just sits here.
Well, that sucks. Because he's coming from the perspective of, look, you all hurt my business by getting me out of these now what we're going to pretend are assault weapons because you banned them. You hurt me significantly. In fact, you hurt me to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars.
I think in the building, somewhere to the tune of right around 50 grand.
50 grand. And now on top of that, you're telling me that if I have a gun that was used as collateral, that was legally transferred before this law went into effect, you're telling me now I'm on the hook for that?
If somebody leaves a pawn here and they don't come back for it, what do I do with it?
Good question. No one knows. No one knows the answer to that. Phil Fortunato, state senator, Republican, he's put in a request to the attorney general's office to answer that question, which is simply, is it against the law if he were to give the gun back, transfer the gun back to the original owner or sell it back, depending on the circumstances in which money is owed? I don't know the answer to that. What is he supposed to do? And that we don't know the answer to that, which seems like a pretty basic question, I think. Certainly the scenario isn't, but the question itself is, if it's not my gun and I've got it, let's say that you loan me your semi-automatic, I love when they say, they're all semi-automatic, gave me your assault weapon, your weapon of war. And this is right before the law was signed. Give it back to you? Am I allowed to do that or no? It's a transfer.
That's a good question, right?
I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. No one does. We're going to try to find out. It really kind of depends on Attorney General Bob Ferguson and his willingness to answer that question. Because this is a guy who doesn't want to see guns on our streets. He's pretending that he's saving lives by going after weapons of war, which are not used often at all in crimes in Washington state. I've still yet to see a crime of any kind of magnitude or anything out of the ordinary for Washington state used with an assault weapon, quote unquote. We had all this gun violence beforehand. Yes, we had a surge of gun violence the last 2.5 years. I reached out to the Snohomish County Sheriff, the Pierce County Sheriff. I think we talked to Whatcom County. And we were like, well, how many guns on this banned list have been used just anecdotally? Because I don't expect them to know off the top of their head. 17, like in crimes. How many, just from your understanding of the arrests being made? Every single one said, I don't think any. I don't think any. And yet those are the guns we banned, which should terrify all of us, because the next thing is, because they're saying we banned that gun because we want to protect lives. Well, if they banned a gun to protect lives and it doesn't actually protect lives, wouldn't logic tell us that the next thing they're going to do is go after handguns? And I've got another bone to pick just in the media in general. No more saying semi-automatic handgun. The only reason they say that when used in a crime is because they want to try to demonize gun culture and pretend that a semi-automatic handgun is somehow extremely dangerous, and they want to equate it to an automatic machine gun. Tell me if the handgun is like a revolver, because 99.9% of the time it's going to be a semi-automatic. Yeah, that's what we sell. That's what people are buying. That's what people use. I don't understand this. Oh, it's a semi-automatic. So? Just say handgun. I assume it's semi-automatic. Why are you telling me that? Tell me if it's a revolver. Tell me it's like an old school Clint Eastwood gun. You tell me that and then I'll do it. It was a musket. Okay, Grant, tell me that. That's interesting. But telling me it's a semi-automatic handgun is just transparent with what they're doing. Push the button.
What's trending? National.
So crime has gotten so bad in Chicago where a Walgreens has decided to redesign its interior to only have two aisles available for browsing, the quote-unquote essentials, and the rest of it is behind the counters. This, I assume, is a test case to go national. Because you've got business after business after business essentially saying the same thing. We cannot keep up with all of the theft, the shoplifting. We just can't do it anymore. California makes it so that so long as you, and pretty much all places now do this, certainly on the left or run by the left, as long as you steal below X amount of dollars, $999, $750, whatever it is, you will not be prosecuted for a felony, which is serious. You'll only be hit with a misdemeanor, which, don't worry, we don't actually prosecute those to begin with. And so bad guys are stealing a whole bunch of stuff. Fox Business says that now the customer has to walk through an anti-theft detector, go to two aisles, and on those two aisles, like I said, the essentials. So we're talking about, you know, probably a toothbrush, but just one. Advil, stuff like that. And the rest, you either order via a store clerk or you use a digital, I'm assuming it's some sort of iPad or laptop, at a kiosk. So you type in what you want, hemorrhoid cream. Like, I don't know how to spell hemorrhoid. And then now you used to be able to just get away with like sort of sneaking in and just quickly just grabbing preparation H and then running to the self-checkout stand before anyone saw you. Now you're going to be like, sir, I need some help here. What can I help you with? Some hemorrhoid cream. What's that? I need some hemorrhoid cream. Sir, I can't hear you. You're mumbling. Hemorrhoid cream. Cream of like soup? We don't, it's Walgreens. Hemorrhoid cream. Oh, hemorrhoid cream. Hold on. Hey, John, do you have the hemorrhoid cream? This guy wants some. Do you know where it is? Do you want the extra strength? I just want anything. Yeah, he wants the extra strength. Yeah, he's just looking at him. He seems uncomfortable. Yeah, no. Okay, yeah. Oh, it's on sale. Do you want to get two jugs? Two jars? It's two for $12.99. It's a great steal. Get it, steal?
I get it, yeah.
Poor guys. They put out a statement, Walgreens. We're testing a new experience at the store with new concepts, technologies, and practices to enhance the experiences of our customers and team members. They say experiences a lot. It continues to offer retail products and pharmacy services, just with a new look and feel that focuses on shopping digitally for convenience. Yeah, this is not convenient. If you have to type something in and then wait for it to be delivered to you, that's not convenient when you're at the store. This is not Amazon. You're not on your own laptop. This is quite the opposite of convenient. Inside the store, customers will find an area where they can pick up orders, digital kiosks for placing an order, as well as an area to shop for essential items. There's a blog called Block Club Chicago. They report a sign instructs shoppers to, quote, place your order and relax, while the staff in store pull the requested items off the shelves for you because they don't trust that you're going to not steal it. Guarantee you, this will be used outside of Chicago and outside of this one store. I guarantee you. Because they specifically, Walgreens, this company, they told analysts at the start of the year, according to Fox Business, that they have an insane amount of retail theft. And as a result, no, I'm kidding. They actually lied. They pretended that they didn't have any issue with it. They were one of the few that said, oh, this is overblown. All the security concern, overblown. It doesn't hit us. Really? What are you doing? It's one of those things where I'm happy to pull that old quote out and shove it in their face. Because they were part of, and maybe they had reason to be like this, they were part of the chorus of folks on the left claiming there was no issue. Do you remember that? Do you remember that we went probably, what, 2 years straight of, oh, it's overblown, there's no problem, any problem we have is probably just COVID-related. It's all those conservatives on Fox News just making it up. It gets clicks, it sells papers, it's a blah, blah, blah. That's what we were hearing for like 2 years. And it was rather surreal because I remember just on the general crime crisis and just going back to like the CHOP Chaz issue. I was there on the ground in CHOP Chaz filming, right? I was reporting live at the time for Tucker almost every single day for 2 weeks or a little over 2 weeks. And somehow I was getting tweeted at saying, you're just making it up. It's not true. I'm like, dude, we've got video. It's not true. It's overblown. No, it's not. But CNN says it's like a street fair. They were impressed. It's remarkable. And so that they have to go to this point, I don't feel bad for them as much as I otherwise would because they were part of the problem, pretending it wasn't an issue. Now, there's some CEO, his name is Joe Badano with IndieMe Solutions. He was actually on Fox Business. And he said for a lot of these retail shops, they don't have any choice but to lock up their products.
What retailers naturally have done is just lock up more merchandise, as you mentioned. And of course, that is a horrible customer experience, as we all know from our own personal shopping experience. But not only that, but it reduces sales 15 to 25%. It costs a lot of labor. And it's just a bad customer experience. So it's really the solution of last resort.
The worst thing when I used to buy razors at a store instead of going online was you would have to flag someone down to get them to open the thing. And then just finding them was already impossible because like so many, especially nowadays, they're not properly staffed.
No, nobody works at these stores.
They've got like two people. And you're just trying to find someone, and you do that weird thing, or at least I have, where you don't leave the aisle. You're sort of at the top of the aisle, and you're looking around, and you're like, where is this woman? I just saw her. Where did she go? But you don't want to leave the area, and I don't know why, unless it's just pure laziness, or The second I leave, that's when the staff member will go through that aisle and I will have just missed him or her. But we all do that. We wait. We finally flag them down. Then they can't find the key. They've got 40 different keys on their stupid keychain, and they finally pick the right one. Then they grab the Schick when you wanted the Bic, or the Bic when you wanted the Schick. It's just a whole big nightmare, only to then spend $34.99 on some stupid four refills of your...
No, you're 100% spot on all of this. It's so annoying to try to flag the person down.
But now, consider this. Now you're doing that for everyday items, for batteries, let's say, while simultaneously, seven other customers are doing the exact same thing. Think about what that's going to mean to you as just a customer who just want to kind of go in and out. What this might ironically do is push people online. Where if you're going to be inconvenienced and you're going to have to wait, even if it's just adding an extra 7 minutes to your shopping experience, some people might just, ah, screw it. It's just not worth the hassle. I'll just go online.
So I'm the only person who still shops in person for, like, anything, right?
Especially from Oklahoma.
Well, I don't know. I'd like going to the store and picking the thing out. But if it's going to be like this, why don't they just assign an individual employee to each shopper to go around and make sure they don't steal things or to unlock every single one of the cabinets or whatever we're doing.
Just do a pat down beforehand.
You can't do that.
Why not?
That's invading my privacy.
No, you'd have to consent.
Oh. Well, then I'd consent to leave the store.
Yeah, well, that's my point. Here's a serious concern. What about when you do have to get hemorrhoid cream?
Yeah, that sucks.
You're just going to go to this random, like, 23-year-old.
That's going
to
be Duncan's older brother or something.
Yes, it might be Duncan in a few years. And you're telling them I need... hemorrhoid cream. Sorry, the hemorrhoid cream. Like, I don't know. And I would feel weird asking for that. Wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, they already have the registers now sometimes that shout out the product. And it's like, put your hemorrhoid cream in the bag.
This is why whenever anyone complains about the self-checkout, including when it asks you for a tip, I would tip to not have to say, if I had hemorrhoids, I'm getting the hemorrhoid cream and the extra strength. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. When we come back, it'll be time for the big local.
Balmy, Mercer Island, Des Moines.
This is the big local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Shoreline, Woodinville, Burien.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the big local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. It's the part of the show where we completely ignore the stories coming out of Seattle, and instead we focus our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in Federal Way, a city that's become victimized by left-wing policies run amok, left-wing policies that stem from Olympia. I think their mayor, Jim Farrell, has been doing his best to push back. But there's only so much you can do when you live in a state that, thanks to policy, crime isn't taken seriously. Where you know you can be a criminal, be a bad guy, and get away with it. Steal, assault. I think it's to the point where some folks feel emboldened to commit gun violence and think that they're going to get away with it. And the truth is, many times, depending on the severity of the crime, they do get away with it. In Federal Way, apparently, there have been some incidents at the two Walmarts. We know this because a listener, her name is Priscilla, reached out to me, complaining about what's been going on, asking us to take a look. Because she's been noticing, not only has she personally seen some of the crime, but she noticed this app next door where people from communities go in and they post what's been going on. And one particular post got her attention. A young mother said she was attacked. And for Priscilla, this was the last straw. She needed to say something.
One too many things, because there have been shootings in the parking lots around here. There have been an infinite number of car thefts, robberies, assaults. And I just, enough is enough. Walmart owns that property. And in my feeling, they owe it to their customers to keep their customers safe while they're shopping.
Now, producer Max had an opportunity to look into the allegations of crime. You got the opportunity actually to speak to Priscilla. What did you find out? What is actually going on the ground?
So the incident that she talked about right there was a young mother, actually, who had her 2-year-old child, was getting ready to load the child into the car when someone came up and attacked her, attempted to steal that car, which is just crazy. Luckily, the mother was able to get in the car, lock the door, call the police. But these are really scary incidents. I mean, we covered a story not terribly long ago where someone stole a car that had children in it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about shoplifting in the last segment, right? Yeah, obviously consumers, you don't want to see people stealing stuff, but consumer safety, I think, is incredibly important. And we have, you know, 5 incidents at 2 Walmarts just last month alone in the parking lot.
What gets reported?
Yes, those are what got reported. And it's just crazy. And I'm happy with some of the things that Priscilla told me, just from the simple fact that she said it in the clip there. She got activated in that moment. She saw that a mother got attacked with a small child, and she said, enough is enough. I'm going to reach out to Walmart corporate. I'm going to try to, for lack of a better term, make as big of a stink about this as possible because it deserves attention. People deserve to be safe in the parking lot of a grocery store.
And her ask is actually pretty simple. She's saying, hire capable security.
Hire security guards that are allowed to physically interact with criminals that are doing criminal action on their property. And they should announce that they're doing that. If I knew that security guard standing there would intercede if he saw me being attacked in his parking lot, I would feel much safer and I would return to shopping at my local Walmart.
So Walmart did not respond to our request for comments, but you said Priscilla reached out. Did she get through to them?
Yeah, after a couple of tries, she was able to get through to corporate, and she was able to have at least a short conversation with the manager, basically to acknowledge what she's saying, to acknowledge that there has been these incidents in the parking lot, but it doesn't sound like there was any kind of solution or anything beyond an acknowledgement from Walmart that this is going on.
Yeah, and look, when you're a Walmart in this case, you have to... Yeah, to see what's going on, question is whether or not you can legitimately mitigate any of this kind of crime. When we're talking about security, generally they're going to be indoors. They're not allowed to go chasing folks, for example. But if you had someone who, upon seeing something happen, they could immediately call 911 rather than hope that the poor mother is able to get into her vehicle with her phone, lock the door, and then call and be, you know, able to do that. Sometimes you're not able to do that. And sometimes you're just kind of, oh my God, I'm just a bit panicked. And you just get in. And by the time you even think to call 911, because you're still kind of collecting your thoughts, the person flees. Priscilla makes, I think, an important point here, where this is not just a Walmart issue.
It's time that the big box stores step up and protect their customers. And it's a safe, if it's, say, a Safeway that shares a parking lot with 10 other stores, then they all need to get together and go to the landlord who owns that parking lot and demand this type of protection.
Love stories where people say enough is enough and decide to step up and do something. Whether or not it's effective, short term, long term, I don't know. Sometimes you're going to lose. Sometimes, no matter how much energy you put into it, you're going to lose. But she did the right thing in reaching out to us, because now Walmart knows that we're paying attention to this story. You can read more about this issue over at KTTH.com. Max's story is up there right now. Or just text the keyword RANTS, R-E-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Meanwhile, the Centralia Police Department Chief, Stacey Denham, who will be on the show tomorrow, said that, yeah, criminals know they're not going to be chased. They're familiar with the law. And so his department has had to get the framing around this from King 5 is get a little bit more creative. I don't know if what they're doing is creative per se. It's using technology to your advantage. And that is a positive, mostly. There's something called Flock Safety. It is a network of cameras that, through artificial intelligence, can identify license plates of cars, or vehicles, I guess, that have been involved in crimes. So it's looking at an internal database, Let's say that there was a stolen car. Let's say that a criminal is on the loose and you know he or she is in their car. It can pull from that database. And once it picks up on that license plate, it tells cops, hey, that car you're looking for, that driver is over here. It's on Main Street. And so they're using Flock Safety for this month and next month as part of a program, a policy to see whether or not they want to make this into an official program for them. And the chief says, so far it's working. We've recovered way more stolen cars this spring than in the past 2 years.
I challenged my officers to come up with new ways to get things done, and they responded.
Now, in fairness, they just got technology that responded. But, I mean, his point is valid. This is what King 5 says about the system. When a camera tips off an officer to a stolen car's location, the officer obviously gets there, waits until the vehicle is parked before approaching the car. Then the officer places a strip of spikes in front of one of the tires. It's called a terminator. So if the suspect drives off, that tire gets a flat. That has not always been the safest thing in the world, although usually the strips, I can't remember the what the Seattle one is, but usually it's when a car is already driving, and so it's been incredibly dangerous, and that's why a lot of officers don't like doing that. And so in this case, if the car is already stopped, depending on the placement of the spike strip, obviously it's a positive. I'm trying in my head to conceptualize what it is they're doing, because I imagine the driver in the car, is it to park or is it to stop? Because if it's just to stop, let's say it's at a red light, they're going to see the cop behind him carrying a spike strip called the Terminator. He can be like, I see you, and then just drive off, which is exactly why the chief says, as much as this has helped us, we do need to get the law changed back to what it was.
Even with Flock Safety, even with the Terminators, the problem that we have is we still have a bunch of cars that run from us, stolen cars. We get behind them, try to stop them, because that's the only avenue we have. They take off. When they take off, we have to let them go, and that's all we can do.
He must be lying, though, because I was told by Democrats that none of that is happening. Look at our study. None of that is actually happening. I'm actually surprised, and maybe it's just not in the story, and this is one thing I want to talk to him about tomorrow. Are there no concerns over privacy? Because this is very Big Brother, right? And granted, they say it's only going to ping us if a license that we tell it to look for drives in front of one of these cameras. And they're 20. I'm assuming they're in, you know, highly driven roads and intersections. But normally we get someone saying, this is Big Brother looking at us. What if they surveil all of us and it's really just going to be used to go after our activism? We often hear that. And I'm curious if there's been any of that being discussed on the ground in Centralia. Granted, Centralia is not Seattle. Considerably saner people who live there. But you always, every community has one of them.
I mean, it was a thought that ran through my head when I was pulling this audio. Because
even I had that thought.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, if they can track any license plate anywhere, they could presumably do that for any reason.
Well, yeah, I mean, it will look up what you tell it to look up. That's the software. So if I tell it to look up good-looking, smarmy, but also deeply intelligent and witty Jews, like, it'll spot me in a heartbeat the second that I'm driving by. And it'll tell the cops where I am. Because you're telling it to.
But you don't even have a car.
I just said Jews.
Oh.
I didn't say driving.
So they'll find John Stewart?
No, I said good looking, smarmy, funny, okay. And witty.
I don't know what swarmy means.
Smarmy, not swarmy.
Oh.
I'm not eating a chicken. Finally, fed up community members partnered with the Tukwila Police Department because they are sick and tired of getting called out by me on the show. I've been picking on Tukwila a lot lately. In this case, they partner to clean up all the graffiti that has been popping up. It's not a crazy amount of graffiti, but it's enough where they're taking notice. And they're saying, I don't like this. I don't want this a part of my community. We're already dealing with other issues beyond our control. This is something that maybe we can tackle, and it'll go a long way. And so this was spearheaded by a retired teacher. Her name is Katrina Doan. She spoke with King 5.
We noticed that somebody had been doing a whole lot of tagging. And we don't want that in our community. We want Tukwila to be beautiful.
I mean, you're going to have to move out of Tukwila. But I mean, her point is a valid one. She hopes that these community cleanups that she set up will happen a lot more often, maybe do it once a month if the need is there, and that people will step up because, hey, cleaning this graffiti up shows that we have pride in our city.
What's the best thing you can do when graffiti happens is to paint over it within 24 hours, to just send that message, not here, not in our community. That's not our kind of place.
Yeah, good for them. Graffiti, people downplay, I think, or maybe just don't talk about enough, the message graffiti sends to people. Because in a lot of ways, it is art that shows off the lawlessness. That's generally what it means. And Tukwila's already got enough of that. God bless them and their stolen car break-in problem. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. And you should, because I've got two stories that you get to pick which one I discuss. Story number one, thousands are living in RVs on LA streets. Leaders say a solution is elusive. Really, guys? Really, it's elusive? Or story number two, CNN steps in it, calling Nikki Haley a white governor. Was that intentional? I don't know. Let's discuss if you want me to. 1-800-465-8770, your texts.
You pick the topic on the Jason Rand Show.
Indeed you do, and thank you so much for allowing me to talk about the racist over at CNN. There's a lot of unpacking to do here. The question is simply whether or not Bakari Sellers, who is a race baiter of epic proportions, whether or not he made this error intentionally. Was it not really an error? Was it just a subtle jab at Nikki Haley, or was it just a simple mistake? Oops. We all screw up from time to time. Nikki Haley, of course, did the town hall with CNN yesterday. She is Indian. And yet, apparently, to Bakari Sellers, she's just some white lady.
But there also has to be some credit given to a white governor from the Deep South being able to go to 9 funerals, because I saw the exhaustion on her face, being a leader during that time and being able to bridge people together. And I'm not sure why Nikki Haley won't tell the full story. This was an issue about race. Okay.
Did you hear that?
I did.
Intentional or not? Intentional and subtle, or just a careless mistake? Now, here's the truth. The answer doesn't matter. Because we know exactly what would have happened if this was on the other side. If Nikki Haley was a Democrat, if she was speaking on Fox News as a town hall participant, and someone who is analyzing afterwards called her a white lady, it would be immediately condemned. It would be condemned in a heartbeat. We would get story after story from the Daily Beast or Salon about the erasure of Indian Americans, courtesy of the white supremacist Republican Party. They would go nuts. They wouldn't give any benefit of the doubt. Now, I'm going to give a benefit of the doubt and just assume he didn't intend to say it that way, but I don't think he would give anyone the benefit of the doubt. I don't. I think they would go into overdrive and they would try to make this about something bigger than it actually is. Now, I have not yet seen anything that he's said on air. If he said it, I don't know. Addressing this, I'm on his Twitter feed and I don't see anything. Just simply saying, yeah, it was a mistake. Don't worry. You don't have to read too much into it. Which he should say, I think, because it does seem like he's dismissing the fact that she is not a white lady. Why is that important? Here's why. We get told over and over and over again about the importance of diversity. Diversity is all that matters. Even when everyone thinks the same, folks on the left seem to believe that as long as you look different or love different or identify differently, you're the future of America. We want a number of nominees who look like the American people. What's the party that looks like the American people? It's the Republican Party, the candidates. This was also the case the last election. You guys on the left, Democrat Party has an old white dude as the presidential candidate. We have Indians. We have black people. We have white people. We have people whose names you've never heard of and you're wondering whether or not the person is white. I'm assuming Governor Burgum is white. But I mean, we have actual diversity of women. We have on our side the slate of candidates who look like America. And yet we're told over and over and over again that all Republicans are white supremacists, that it's a party of white old men. They never seem on the left to look internally and say, oh, maybe it's not a good look to have another white guy, while constantly condemning how evil white men are, cisgendered white men. The only white guy that they like is Pete Buttigieg, who's like the whitest white guy you will ever meet in the history of white people. You look up white guy in Urban Dictionary, and it's not Max. It's Pete Buttigieg. But they like him because he's gay. Should we play any of the clips? Do we have any time? Yeah. Nikki Haley took on the abortion issue.
I think Biden and Harris have been pretty clear that they don't support any restrictions. I mean, they've said
abortion up until the time of birth, right?
I don't think that's the language they use, but yes, I mean, theoretically, right? They don't support restrictions. They say it should be up to a woman, her doctor, and her God. That's what they say.
And I think that's the conversation we need to have, is that they agree with abortions up until the time of birth, and most Americans do not agree with that.
So smart. We know we're going to lose on abortion nationwide on that talking point, unless we frame it around their actual position on the left, which is abortion without any restrictions. The Jason Rand Show.